It's quite simple, really. I just need to show you some film.
You mean like going to the pictures?
Something like that.
Drag it down.
Welcome to another fantastic episode, everybody. I'm Mitch.
And I'm Stefan, and this is Drag Mitch to Hell. But for now, we're just having a little bit of hell.
Little hell.
Yes.
Yes. This is our generalist podcast series, where they're kind of our interstitial episodes between our main episodes, where we kind of discuss what we've been watching. We don't kind of do it. We do it.
That's right. We do it.
Yes. I got my booster shot today. I forgot to say that.
Oh, yeah? How are you feeling?
Arm's a little sore, but otherwise fine.
Movie theaters are closed again. Right when Scream was about to come out, which is incredibly disappointing.
I was going to ask you about that. I was so excited. I had like a nice segue. I was like we both love Scream so much. Yes. And I'm super excited for that too. It's probably the only movie that I've been wanting to see in theaters.
Yeah, so it's disappointing. And again, just, you know, I can live without indoor dining, but it's just annoying. Like this whole situation, I'm just tired of it. So
I think everybody's
I'm glad that you've got your booster and you're staying healthy and happy. And I'll probably
not healthy, man.
That sounds really weird.
I guess, well, maybe I am being healthy. I don't know. I told you I'm doing dry January, so I haven't had a drink in 5 days, which is
nice.
Impressive for me.
Hey,
I like somewhat. Beer. It sucks that Brett Kavanaugh ruined that statement. you can't say I like beer anymore without that crying testimony creeping into your memory. Also RIP Betty White.
yes Betty White, yeah,
that's so sad. Growing up, Lake Placid was such a big movie for me and my folks. She plays like a really no bullshit older lady who's like feeding her cattle to the giant gator. Yeah,
or is it a crocodile movie?
Crocodile, I don't know. We should rewatch that movie together. Do you remember that movie? Do you have fond memories, or do you hate it?
I liked Lake Placid. It wasn't one of my favorites. I was more of a Deep Blue Sea guy.
Wow,
that was more
a clear winner.
My bag.
Lake Placid is a clear winner there, man.
It was just sharks for me, I guess. You can see my Jaws poster that I haven't hung up, sitting in the back of behind me here. I don't know, just something about sharks, and that movie was a ton of fun for me. So I still enjoyed Lake Placid. Like, I can get into a creature movie, but yeah, it was more Deep Blue Sea. But maybe I'll rewatch it for Betty White.
Yeah, that's the posted like a screen capture of like a subtitled clip where she's like, "If I had a dick, this is where I tell you to suck it." Just a great line from Lake Placid.
Yeah.
Anyways. All I have to say, what a great end to the year. I got into an accident, and then when I got home and I saw the news, I was like, fuck this, man.
Oh yeah, your accident. Tell me about this. Unless you don't want to relive it and relive that trauma, you know, we can.
It's like barely qualified as an accident, to be honest. I was stopped at a red light, and then in Hamilton, there are like 4-lane, 1-way streets, like big, you know, kind of like they're like essentially expressways, like major traffic arteries. And I was stopped at a red light, and I was in the leftmost lane, and in a parking lot that had doesn't have any kind of like barriers that would obscure somebody's view who would be in the parking lot, was parked in front of one of basically the entrance where, you know, you have the arm that goes up that it grants you entry or stays down to tell you to fuck off. It had been down, and the driver decided at this red light where there was a wall of cars that would block his retreat, it was the appropriate time to go in reverse. And he reversed into me as I was honking my horn. He's going so slowly too. It was like, you know, in Austin Powers where there's the guy screaming as the steamroller is very slowly moving towards him. Yeah. It was like that. I was like honking my horn and being like, I'm here. Please don't continue to do this. Oh, don't commit yourself to this act.
Yeah.
And I just saw my, I had like 2 free days off before in between holiday plans. And I just saw both of those disappearing before my eyes as this was happening. I was like, I have to now commit these 2 days to fixing this problem. It turned out to be like an elderly gentleman who was incoherent and I had to call the police and, you know, basically left it to them to figure out, but he should not have been driving. Let me tell you, I had overheard that he was like, I'm on medication that makes me drowsy. I was like, fuck you. Honestly,
get off the road.
Give me my 2 days back, you prick.
I feel like half the calls that we take at work for impaired drivers are just old people.
Just old.
Which, like, on one hand it's like good because at least there's not people drinking and driving, but then on the other hand it's like, yeah, these people need to not be driving either.
Yeah, man, just they're all put, you know, surrender that license.
Dangerous.
Yeah, he had like a big like scratch down the side of his vehicle from a previous accident of some kind. I was just like, man, this, and he was driving an expensive car. I was like, man, fuck this guy. I'm driving an old Ford Escape, which you've now dented. just salting the wound. Anyways, you want to get into this episode proper and not talk about my stupid faux accident?
Yeah, let's do it. Why don't you take the lead? I think you've got more to discuss here than...
I'm going to probably chop a few things. I want to start off with like a block of things that I've read or watched and enjoyed.
Okay.
The first is a graphic novel called Gideon Falls, which is put together by a bunch of Canadian artists. I just want to run through their names. Lemire, Sarantino, and Stewart are the people who worked on this. And it's about a mysterious black barn that manifests in various areas, and murders are typically attributed to their appearance.
Did you say black barn?
A black barn, yeah, like a painted black barn. And then basically it follows two parallel storylines. One person who is basically has mental health issues and had previously been committed to some kind of institution. Working with this psychiatrist to investigate his history with it as she begins to believe that this is a legitimate thing, which she herself experiences. And then there's another priest almost in like a Midnight Mass kind of vibe where he's replacing a previous priest in a small town. There's almost like a Bev Keen type of like, I don't know what her religious role is, assistant to the, the priest. There's like one of those characters that's like super like a kind of like a busybody-esque type of character, but she's not, the slight spoiler, she's immediately dispatched. Anyway, it's just like a very, very interesting story, and the way that both narratives kind of like overlap is quite good. So the first book is out. It ends on a huge cliffhanger, so I'd like to know where it goes. Okay. But I'd recommend
Gideon
that.
Gideon Falls, is that what you said?
Gideon Falls, yes. I turned away from my mic to read the spine of this like tremendous graphic novel. Let me pull this thing out. Like, it looks pretty cool. You know, like
a little bit of a reflection from the monitor.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good graphic novel. I'm also reading Plunge, which I'd read the first issue of a long time ago, as well as The Autumnal. I will report back on those later on.
Okay.
I also want to plug Lauren Buick's novel, Broken Monsters, which my partner got me for one of the books she got me for Christmas. It wasn't something that I'd actively pursued reading. She just kind of like looked up what are important, like genre-esque type novels, you know, that would be interesting. And it's really, really good so far. It follows, much like Gideon Falls, it follows multiple narratives. Slight detriment to the book is that they're very, very abrupt introductions to characters. Like it's literally like 5 pages drop out of a character into another one. Okay. So if you're initially reading, it might be kind of a deterrent, but it is very, very good. It tracks a detective, primarily a detective, investigating a murder where a boy has been, his torso has been cut off and it's been replaced with the torso of a deer.
Jesus.
It's
sounds pretty, like my kind of shit.
yeah, it's almost like Hannibal style, like elevated killings.
Right.
I don't know. So there's a serial killer who's like committing those kinds of crimes.
Yeah.
A bunch of like interesting narratives. There's somebody who's trying to find out a unique angle for a story about Detroit. And I assume his narrative is going to like be pulled into the detective's narrative. It also follows her daughter. And then there's also an artist storyline as well. And all the characters are super differentiated and like compartmentalized. And I'm just excited to see where it goes.
What's the name of the book
called? It's called Broken Monsters.
Okay.
By Lauren Bukes. And she also has a book called The Shining Girls, which I'm going to try to read next after this. But
okay.
Yeah. On to two other things. I'd like to say that I'm still enjoying Yellow Jackets a lot.
I'm two episodes behind right now. I haven't watched the most recent two. But
yeah,
still very much since the last time we spoke on here about it, at least. Still enjoying it. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it because it's so fresh and so new, and I don't want to like ruin any plot points. It does have some potential supernatural elements, but none of those have been like, there hasn't been a stake planted into the ground saying that this is supernatural still, which, you know, I'm interested to see where it goes. It's also been renewed for a second season, so find out what happens there. And the last thing that I want to talk about very, very generally is Dope Sick, which is possibly the most depressing show that I've ever watched in my entire life.
Yeah, you were saying that the other day when you messaged me about it. And I've heard from a couple of people that it's worth watching. I just haven't gotten around to it. So tell me about it.
Yeah, I'll be pretty brief. It deals with the rise and fall of OxyContin. And it, again, like I think most of the things I've mentioned so far has multiple narratives. You have the narrative of a DEA agent who basically folded on the case, had previously investigated the Sacklers, who are the family that owns Purdue Pharma, who produced this drug. And basically they had a patent out on some type of opioid and it was expiring. And they're like, what new thing can we develop that'll fill this like gap in our product line to ensure that Purdue Pharma continues to exist as a pharmaceutical company? And the idea is to make a wild claim that they can not cure, but create a drug that has low addictive properties, using like a time release structure, for this drug, which is fucking bullshit. it's all BS. And it also has like a district attorney. There's two underlings that are pursuing this, played by, I feel so bad. I actually don't remember there's tons of recognizable people. Michael Keaton plays a doctor in this. There's a slew of talent. Rosario Dawson is the DEA agent, but I'm forgetting a ton of people's names right now. There are a lot of character actors you'd recognize, but it's very, very good. God, what's her name? She was in Booksmart. Do you remember that at all or no?
I remember the movie, but I don't remember like the one of the two.
Not main... Jonah Hill's sister, but the other main actor in it.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm so bad with names.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I'm not even going to I'm not going to tap away at my keyboard and try to figure it out. But she plays a minor in it because essentially when they're rolling out this drug, they target any place that has a huge base of manual labor workers that would have like repetitive strain injuries.
Okay.
And they're basically saying that they want to broaden the reach of opioids with this like quote unquote low addictive drug. So they're trying to use it for what we would consider to be maybe like pain that doesn't require opioids. They're trying to now make those a candidate for opioid drugs, thus like spider webbing out their sales, I guess. And there's also like a sales team going out and like targeting doctors. It's a really interesting show, but it is like crushing because there's like so much human wreckage associated with this.
Okay. But, and it's on Disney Plus, right?
It's on Disney Plus, yeah.
Which is interesting.
It's a Starz show, I think. And for some reason it's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Yeah.
How many episodes have you watched or exist for this show?
I don't know how many exist. I've watched 4, I think.
Okay.
It's not without flaws. Like, there's a scene where Rosario Dawson's DEA agent character is like learning or realizing that this is a problem. It's her on the phone. It's like her underlining like buzzwords like increased crime, drugstores getting sacked, like a bunch of those. Oh yeah, it's pretty silly. There is actually, I don't want to talk about it because it is a new show.
Okay,
it is a spoilery thing, but there's a time jump that I think is a disservice to the structure of the show. But I'm gonna leave it at that, and you know, if I ever remember this like a year down the road, I'll bring it up.
All right.
A few flaws, but an otherwise enjoyable, depressing expedition.
Okay.
Dope sick. Yeah. Check it out.
I will. I will check it out.
All right. Now tell me something that you've been watching. I rattled off a few things.
Yeah. So I told you I was watching or doing this challenge for, you know, 31 movies in 31 days for January. One of the prompts for selecting the movies was a body horror film. And I was also trying to, in my selections, pick as many 2021 movies as possible so that I would have more for our lists that we'll talk about, on probably our next one of these. Trying to watch as much as possible from last year. So I selected Titan.
it's French Titan.
Yes. French movie, which I didn't really know anything about. Honestly, I didn't even know it was body horror until my friend told me what was on his list, because I do this challenge with a buddy of mine. And he had that as his body horror film. And I was like, oh, great. I can squeeze in this movie that was, you know, came out last year. It played the Cannes Film Festival and won the Palme d'Or. So I'm like, okay, this is a movie I should watch if I'm doing best of, worst of last year.
Right.
And it's a fucking weird movie. what do you know about this movie, Stefan?
So it's the director of Raw.
Yes.
I'm sure it played Cannes last, whenever it came out. It played TIFF as well.
Probably.
Somebody fainted during the screening, kind of a fake thing. Well, not fake, but, you know, they blow it out of proportions. Right. As good press for a movie when something like that happens.
For sure.
She fucks a car and has a car baby is to my understanding what happens.
Well, yeah. I mean, spoilers for anyone who doesn't know about what's going on in this
movie. Oh, sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry. I think it's like everybody knows this about the movie. Yeah. Who knows what? But I said French Titan. I meant French Titanium because it's...
Right. So
right? Yeah.
The movie opens with a scene about this young girl who's behaving, you know, badly in the back of a car that her father is driving. And then, you know, as a result of this, he turns around, gets into an accident, and you sort of see that she hits her head on the window and has to have a titanium plate put into her head, which is where the title comes from, I'm assuming. Well, you know, and the baby. But but then basically immediately you jump to her as like an adult, and she's performing at like a car show. So she's like a model, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, sexy women posing with the cars and doing, you know, weird stuff that, you know, apparently men are into this, you know, they go look at cars and there's attractive women that, you know, dance on them. I don't know, but that's what she's up
to. What a weird subculture.
Yeah, I don't get it, but, do your thing, you know, if that's your thing, enjoy it. But yeah, essentially, you know, we come to realize that she is a serial killer as well, pretty early on in the movie. And then the sort of rest of the plot is her being kind of on the run a little bit and developing a relationship with this firefighter, which I won't get into all the details, but there's some weird stuff.
This sounds wild.
It is. It's never dull. That's, I can certainly say that about the movie. In terms of my enjoyment of it, I'd say it's a mild thumbs up. I think it's certainly not a movie for everybody. But the lead actress, I'm assuming this is her. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. Agatha Roussel. She's great in it. It's very bizarre. Certainly, you know, body horror stuff. Because, like, as you mentioned, she has sex with a car and then becomes pregnant with a car's baby. And there's, you know, instead of bodily fluids at times, there's motor oil. And, you know, it's weird. And, you know, I don't want to get into it
into
too much detail.
I have so many questions.
Well, I mean, feel free to ask. No, I can do my best to answer them. But
I'd actually like to watch it. And a lot of my questions are the mechanics of that scenario. I don't want you to spoil it because I would just like to experience it and see, and then maybe talk to you about it later on.
Yeah.
I'd also like to watch it because, you know, we are putting together not our best of 2021, but a medley of 2021.
Yeah. For us to talk about, you know, great things about last year and some not so great things that we saw.
Yeah.
But
it's been, I haven't watched anything that I've enjoyed, really. It's been very disappointing for me.
I've got a few things. I've got such a long list, though, of things I want to get to that I just, like, haven't gotten around to yet. Like, I've been watching lots of 2021 stuff, and everything I'm watching or a bunch of the things, I'm like, pretty good. This was pretty good. Yeah. The next thing, pretty good. But there's nothing that's really taken it over the top here for me. Like I said, a couple of things, but that's it. So, you know, I gotta keep on that train. This is another one that, you know, like I said, it never dull, certainly an interesting movie. You know, I'm not super into, like, super bizarre things like that.
That's what I keep putting you through mostly with this podcast. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But I think if you are a body horror fan, check it out. Or if you liked Raw, which I think has also body horror,
things.
Like, there are certainly scenes in this that make you wince and want to look away, and you're like, why is this happening? I don't want to look at this. But some people like that, you know. So
yeah,
check it out if you're curious. And if that doesn't sound like your thing, then don't, because you probably wouldn't like it.
All right, solid. I'll jump back in with something that I watched that I had zero expectations with. We were visiting Anna's folks, my partner's folks, and her sister has triplets. So when the triplets come over, our dog, who's really poorly behaved, sequesters himself up into a bedroom. And unfortunately got real, real anxious this time. So I sat up there with him and I was trying to figure out what to watch. And I didn't want to watch anything heavy because, you know, I was there with my panting dog. So I wanted to relax, man. So I put on a movie that had some good reviews, not super, super positive, but it has some atrocious artwork and it has a terrible name. Which has been a deterrent for me to watch it. And that is Werewolves Within.
I don't know this movie.
It sounds terrible, though, right? You have to acknowledge it's a terrible name.
I don't like the title. I haven't seen the artwork. Let me Google that while you...
Yeah, Google it, and I'll give the, like, a little bit about it. This is directed by Josh Rubin, who did Scare Me, which is... a decent movie about two people telling stories to one another to try to scare each other. It runs way too long, but it is largely an enjoyable experience. And it stars Sam Richardson, who I know most from I Think You Should Leave. And he plays the guy who does the little buff boy competition. He's like the announcer.
Yeah.
Are you looking at the artwork?
I am. It certainly looks like, I don't know what the tone of this movie is, but, like, looks like it's, you know, sort of a goofy horror movie that's trying not to take itself seriously. That'd be my guess here. But, like,
well, maybe it's accurate.
Names on the top. It's like, I'm sure that these are, you know, actors who I'd recognize, but it's just like, you know, oh, it's got George Basil and Milana Vaintrub and Cheyenne Jackson, Michael Chernus, Glenn Schwartzler.
Did you throw in a fake name?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm like, who the fuck are these people?
Yeah, seriously.
Why are their names all on this poster?
Yeah.
So tell me about it.
Okay. So this is about Sam Richardson plays a parks ranger who is going to a town that has been visited by an oil magnate who wants to basically take over a parcel of the land. He wants to buy a lot of people's properties for the purposes of putting a pipeline in. So he's going to the town under that understanding, and you are introduced to his character, who is a very, he's a Dick Durkin. I want to go back to Split
Best,
Second.
Best name.
Yeah, he's a nebbish park ranger. He's broken up with his partner, although he isn't, at that point, he isn't sure that he's been broken up with, because he's so like out to lunch with social cues. And he's listening to almost like a, like how to be a man, how to be like an alpha male tape, like, cause he's so like, you know, like a beta person. And if you are introduced to that character, you're assuming that this movie is going to be terrible, cause it's all going to be like how to be a man. And okay. that should never be the point of any movie ever.
Wow. You're not watching the right movies then.
It's true. What it does with that is actually very, very good. So anyways, he comes to this town, and it very quickly is besieged by a bunch of different types of murders, all that point towards a potential werewolf situation. A lot of the humor actually works quite well, I thought. And I hate horror comedy. It's my least favorite genre mashup of all genre mashups. Its success rate is like 1% for me, and everything else is just absolute trash. So this actually does almost the impossible. It makes like an enjoyable experience. I don't want to say too much more about it. I didn't even write anything down. I was just like, hey, this movie is actually somewhat decent.
Because I think, and maybe it leans less into the comedy aspect, but The Wolf of Snow Hollow is another movie that we've both watched. I'm curious if you had to pick that one, Snow Hollow, or this one, which one is more successful for you?
150% Wolf of Snow Hollow is the better film. However, if you're looking for another snowbound werewolf movie, you know, give us a try.
If you watch The Wolf of Snow Hollow and you're like, I want more of this vibe, then you know, maybe this will tickle your fancy a little bit.
Yeah, so Wolf of Snow Hollow is more interesting because it juggles genre, or sorry, like moods. Like it's funny and scary. This movie is never at all scary. It's okay. Mostly comedy. The comedy bits do work mostly for me. It does have obnoxious, we talked about Edgar Wright and him not being a director for either of us, really. There's a lot of like his style of like staccato insert shots, like bang, 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 okay. All different insert shots. It's pretty aggressive, and it's overused in this, much like Edgar Wright's movies where he uses that all the time. Like it's kind of obnoxious. So all things considered, I had an incredibly low bar going into this. I actually enjoyed myself. So check it out. I don't think I have much more to say about it, cause it would give away plot details.
Okay. You know what? I'll talk about something that's probably not overly interesting to the listener, which maybe is not a great way to open that. But a movie that I watched for this, the same challenge, this January thing, which was the prompt was watch a movie about racing. And so I decided I've never seen this movie, and it's sort of polarizing, I think, for some people. But also, I think it's going to look real pretty on my TV.
Fast and the Furious.
No. Speed Racer.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
The Wachowski sibling, Emil Hirsch adaptation of, what is it, an anime?
Something like manga anime. I don't know the history of Speed Racer.
Yes, me neither. And the reason why I want to talk about it, why I chose it amongst several other things I've watched, is because we've talked recently about CG and me saying, you know, oh, I don't like watching big CG things fight other big CG things. And I don't want to paint a perception of myself that I don't appreciate good CG. I think it's mostly when all the action that's happening is CG and like the characters are CG, where it's like we were mentioning Godzilla and Kong, I think, yeah, in that conversation, where it's like Godzilla isn't real, King Kong's not real, all of this is just like, I'm like, well, I feel like I'm watching a video game. Like, it looks good, it's good CG, but like, I don't care. But this movie, it's almost entirely like CG as far as, you know, the racing sequences and stuff go. But it looks fucking awesome.
And yeah, it looks great.
And that's why I think the movie was successful. The reviews were not good for it when it came out. But I wish I saw this in the theater, because the colors and the racing sequences, everything is just like bright and like bombastic and crazy. And it was a lot of fun to watch. The stuff in between where they're not racing, less so. Like, it's fine, you know. It's definitely an adaptation of a fucking cartoon. Like, you know, it's not, you know, deep or thought-provoking in really any sort of way. It's just like, it's the definition of a popcorn movie. But
yeah,
I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, like I said, the visuals are the reason to watch the movie. And, you know, I haven't watched it since I saw it in theaters. But I think I might have enjoyed it more than watching Mad Max Fury Road, which is also a movie that's like, you know, a lot of cars and, you know, stuff going on, colors and things like that. And, you know, maybe that's not accurate if I go back and rewatch Fury Road. But I remember being disappointed by Mad Max when I saw
it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it was just the hype was too much. I went in and the hype machine had been like, this movie is amazing and like, you won't believe it. And I watched it and I was like, yeah, it was good. But like,
oh, I remember you saying that. We talked about our best movies of the 2010s with on Rob's podcast, and I brought that up, and I think it kind of let me down a little bit.
For sure. Which,
you know, fair. Yeah. You know.
But this, I think I went in with low expectations, and I was just like, you know, it's a cartoon, but like, it might be, you know, a feast for the eyes, but I enjoyed it. And I can see why a lot of people, you know, take drugs and then watch it.
Because I can see a very fair act, you know?
Yeah.
But do whatever enhances the experience, I guess, yeah. Right?
But yeah, that was just sort of out of nowhere and for my challenge, and I'm glad I watched it. Nice on my big TV, sitting there, you know, taking in all
letting the it wash over you.
What's that?
Yeah,
exactly.
Letting it wash over you. Did you see The Matrix Resurrections?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Did you see it?
No, I'm interested because, you know, The Matrix was a big movie when we were growing up. I remember seeing that in the theater and just like being in love with the experience. I'm curious. The trailers look terrible.
I actually disagree. Well, the first trailer anyway, I liked the first trailer mostly in that I think it was an easy trailer. They didn't tell you anything about the plot. It was just... Yeah. Visuals and like
in White Rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, okay, like this could be decent, but I was always like cautious because, like I said, it doesn't give you anything. And a lot of the trailer like looks like rehashing stuff that we've already seen, which as we talked about with Dexter last time, you know, I'm not a fan of just rehashing the same.
Show me something new.
Exactly. So I don't know, like both my brothers saw this movie. One of them said it was, I don't know if I'm quoting him correctly, but like a steaming pile of dog shit that was also in a dumpster fire, something along those lines. And then the other,
a lot of bad things. Yeah.
And the other one was like, oh, it's pretty decent. So, you know, we'll see. That's really, I think those are the only people that I know that have watched it. Person like close friends or anybody else has seen it. I'll watch it, but I'm not in a rush. I probably won't get to it before we do our best worst of sort of episode.
Yeah. Same here. This is actually a really good segue because I'll jump into the one thing I want to do very, very briefly because you already talked about it. And my fear of Matrix Resurrections is that a lot of either reboots or legacy sequels lately, for like the last 5 years, it feels like so much fan service.
Yeah.
And that's my fear with the film. Candyman 2021, I finally watched. You were meh on it. That's a fair.
Yeah, I think I was pretty lukewarm on it. I didn't, didn't hate it, didn't love it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It won't be on my best of 2021 list, but I'm really, really glad I saw it. This is directed by Nia DaCosta, starring Yahya Abdul-Mateen II and Tayona Paris as the two main leads. I love how they tie in the events from the first film while making a new film. I really enjoyed the characters. I do feel like a little bit of the mythology gets muddled towards the end, like the last final moments. I do think it created kind of like a good set piece for the movie to end on, where not to give too much away, but she's, you know, in a cop car and asks for the rearview mirror to be turned towards her, and whatever follows will be horrific. That was like a good way to utilize the conceit without saying too much, and ruining it for anybody who hasn't seen it. I initially felt kind of annoyed when the characters were offering almost like ripped from the headlines, snippets, sound bites from, newspapers on gentrification. Like, they felt like so like blah blah blah, you know, like there was like no nuance to it. It just felt like perfunctory statements,
right,
about something that wasn't actually understood. But then I thought, like, it actually kind of works for the characters, because I feel like they're obviously participating in gentrification, and might not actually fully understand like the full system of gentrification that drastically alters a neighborhood. And maybe it works. I don't know. Anyways, I enjoyed it. I thought the photography, just like the establishing shots of the city, basically are like a, you know, you're gazing upwards and the camera's snaking through this, you know, urban terrain. I thought it looked great. A lot of the shots were really well composed. I thought Candyman was actually pretty like horrifying in this movie. Like when he's like slowly floating towards people, I was like, that's kind of creepy, man. Yeah. Like I thought it worked. I was never scared, but I was like, you know, it's like a successful representation of a character, and, you know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was well structured, and I was never bored.
Yeah. I think there were good things in it. It didn't wow me by any means, but I think you touched on in the beginning of your sort of analysis, or what you were just saying there, something that I mentioned last time, which was, I probably would have liked it more had I really like known what the story was before, because I had seen Candyman years ago and didn't really remember the story. So like, as the movie was going on, I'm like, okay. Like, whereas had I had just watched it, or, you know, it was a movie I was more familiar with, I would have appreciated what was going on in this movie a lot more.
The connective tissue, I think, is pretty good. It's a good way to tie this movie to the original movie in a way that doesn't feel like nudge, nudge. We're a part of like this like original film.
Yeah. Well, it's like, oh, did you hear the line he just said? Because that's a line from the other movie that you like.
I get so fucking annoyed when that happens. I'm like, there is absolutely no need for you to do this.
Yeah,
just write a character, man.
I hate it. It's like, come with me if you want to live. And it's like, oh, yeah, hey, yep, I remember. Or I'll be back. Like, yeah, you do this in every fucking Terminator movie. We get it. You said this movie.
Or you said this. Who gave Dark Fate a good review? I want to punch that fucking person in the face.
I didn't even watch it. But like,
yeah, I did. And I regret that time.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And I'm sure there are a billion other examples of it from things. But it's just like, the Star Wars movies that come out, and it's like,
I can't even stand that stuff, man.
Just, I'm like, shut up. Just do, just be your own movie. But I don't need you to tell me that you're related to I know. That's why I'm watching.
Just be a movie, man.
It's like, in case you weren't aware, this is related to that. I know.
Just be your own movie.
Clint Eastwood's making fucking grunting noises on her front porch,
pointing at a chair.
God, be a damn movie. Directors.
Why aren't you a movie?
Saying the same goddamn lines again.
But, this is officially derailed. All right. I only want to talk about one more thing before our central film, and that's Aaron Sorkin's being the Ricardos.
Yeah, tell me if this is a movie I want to watch, because I keep seeing it, and I'm like, do I want to see this? I don't know. Is it worth my time?
All right. So here are questions for you. I will inform this through a series of questions. Okay. Do you enjoy Aaron Sorkin? Because a lot of people are frustrated with him as a writer and even more so as a director.
I mean, yes and no. So it's unhelpful. I have a complicated relationship with Sorkin where there's things that he's done that I really like. Like The Social Network is one of my favorite films. I think it's wonderful. I couldn't watch The Newsroom because I felt like it was just so, like, it was too much Sorkin. I feel like he has a style of, like, rapid fire dialogue and the way people talk and everything that sometimes works. Like in The Social Network, I think, you know, it worked well when it was utilized. But then other times I'm just like, what the fuck? No, like, not everyone talks like this. This doesn't work. There and The Newsroom, the one thing that turned me off, I think, is in the first episode. I don't know if you watched The Newsroom, by the way.
Like a few episodes.
But like Jeff Daniels is like on some panel and some girl asked the question, like, why is America the greatest country in the world? And then he's like, it's not. And then everyone in the room is shocked. And he goes on this rant about, like, oh, you know, we're last in math and literacy and blah, blah, blah. Canada has freedom, blah, like, just, and it's just like this giant rant of, like, obvious bullshit that just feels so, like, self-satisfying. Like, Sorkin is just like, you know, I like to use this term, likes the smell of their own farts, just, be, you know, because it's like, oh, God, as he's writing, like, this is so good. And it just, like, it puts me off. And that monologue, too, like, it changes tone after he goes on his rant and everyone's, like, shocked because he's saying America isn't the best country in the world. And then it's, like, the tone changes, like, but it sure used to be. And then it, like, goes on, like, oh, fuck off. I can't stand it. And, like, that's sort of how I feel about some of his writing.
Yeah.
So it can go either way for me with Sorkin stuff. I actually did really like The Trial of the Chicago 7, even if at times the dialogue felt the same sort of way, or it was like, come on, buddy.
Yeah.
But I did like the movie. But yeah, so.
So despite liking The Social Network, your relationship with Aaron Sorkin is complicated.
Yes. I think
the worst possible fucking joke I could have
been. He seems like a pretentious kind of wiener.
He's a total wiener.
And some of his writing is really good, and other times I can't stand it.
I used to get those targeted ads from Masterclass where Aaron Sorkin's like, I'm going to teach you screenwriting. I'm like, I'm not going to listen. I don't care. All right, so that's sort of the first question. I don't have other questions. I don't know why I'm doing it this way. So let me just explain this movie, and you can determine whether or not you like it. My general feelings towards it were, it's good. I didn't love it. I think there are huge structural problems with it. So this basically follows the relationship between Lucille Ball and, oh my God, this is another problem. I don't fucking remember names. The actor that plays Ricky.
Javier Bardem.
Well, no. So not the actor, but the real life actor that played Ricky on the show. It's not important. So okay. Nicole Kidman plays obviously Lucille Ball, which I know a lot of people, she got a lot of flack as a casting for that. She does such a good job. Like, it is haunting, particularly when she's like putting on like the Lucy character. Yeah. It's so good. Okay. It's worth seeing for that performance alone. Javier Bardem is also very, very good as
the guy who
whatever his name Ricardo. Is can't Ricky Ricardo. I can't remember. Did you ever see Jobs? He didn't direct it, but he wrote the script for it.
Yes, the Danny Boyle movie.
Yeah, I don't know if you like that. I did enjoy that personally. A lot of walking and talking, pretty classic.
I thought I didn't like the structure of that movie at all. Which is
okay. So you might not like this either because it also kind of has an odd structural conceit where
every 30 minutes Seth Rogen goes, "Acknowledge the Apple II," and then and then they have argument, and then
Steve Wozniak is not in this movie. I kind of wish he was. J.K. Simmons is. He's pretty good at it. But I don't know if you're aware, but Lucille Ball was called a, it was printed, she was called a communist, and this is around, like, I believe McCarthyism. So if you're referred to as a communist, you have to go under, like, go through a tribunal to determine, you know, whether or not you are a true American.
Okay.
She was cleared, but a news headline does surface that she is a communist. So they assume that this is going to absolutely wreck their show. So they're preparing for that. So they don't know when the headline is going to come out, but they know it's going to happen. So they're also preparing for an episode as if it's going to be their last. So it's a lot of them doing, like, they do a table read, they do, you know, a camera test, and they do camera blocking. And then they go to the taping, and as the taping's happening, just before the taping occurs, the headline drops. You're unsure of, you know, how this is going to go and how it plays. And I was so unfamiliar with the story that was interesting. The major problem with this movie is its structure, in that it jumps between time so frequently and with little little tethers for you to kind of, like, understand, like, oh, this belongs here, okay, and then this belongs over here, and then I'm doing gestures with my hand as if people will be able to see that. the point is, like, I didn't understand half the time, and I pay attention to movies, like, I can follow. I might not know names, my greatest flaw, but I can follow, like, the structure of a film pretty well, and this, I had a hard time, which means that I'm sure a lot of other people are just like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? And that really pulled me out of it. Also, I didn't get, like, a good sense of, you know, Javier Bardem and Nicole Kidman's character's relationship is the central focal point for this movie. And I thought they did a good job of establishing the relationship, how it started. But then as it begins to come to turmoil, I didn't get any nuance to that. And the characters kind of collapsed at that point of the story. Okay. I can't talk about it with greater, you know, details, because this is a new film and I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but I think it's worth watching. If you hate Aaron Sorkin, don't watch it. If you're 50-50, at least watch it for Nicole Kidman's performance, because it is, like, you know, best performances is going to be a category for our 2021 list. I don't think I'm going to give the award to her, but she could be a candidate. Like, it's a great performance. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So, shall we move on to our final film?
Yes, please. Let's do it.
All right, guys. Don't Look Up.
Yes. Don't Look Up.
Oh, man. All right. So we have very different opinions of this movie. Do you want to just start us off? Maybe you can give us I feel like I've been talking way too much, so you can, why don't you give the general, super general rundown of this movie?
Sure. I mean, essentially it revolves around two primary characters, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, who's a scientist, professor, and his PhD candidate, Jennifer Lawrence. And together they discover a comet that is hurtling towards Earth, and will 100% destroy the Earth, essentially. And they go on this tour to try and, you know, warn people about it and get people to take it seriously, which is, you know, varying degrees of successful. But yeah, it's a political satire, I guess, if you want to call it that. Yeah.
Like a Doctor Strangelove or, you know, something to that.
Yeah, exactly.
To that effect.
So, you know, not to be taken overly seriously as far as characters go. But yeah, I mean, that's the basic plot of the movie.
Why don't you just dive into your misgivings? You're right, man. And then I'll be there to,
honestly, you know, I was very surprised, because you don't really use Letterboxd all that much. And for the listener who doesn't know what that is, it's an app where you can track what you watch and give things ratings and reviews and stuff like that. So I track what I watch on there, give things ratings, write a little blurb sometimes. And Stefan doesn't usually post things on there or rate things or anything.
I have a hard time. I forget about it.
No, I totally understand. And it's not not a fault of yours. But when I saw your rating of this movie, I was very surprised because I thought you would be on the same page as me in not liking this movie. Because, one, I don't think it's very funny. But I just find, to me, the word that stands out is obvious, which is there are no interesting takes in this movie. It is the, I think everything is just so, it's low hanging fruit. It is the most obvious takes that you could make as far as like commentary on, you know, the Trump administration, if you want to make comparisons to the, you know, to that, which is, you know, Meryl Streep plays the president in this and Jonah Hill plays her like douchebag
chief of staff slash son. That's funny, man. That's funny.
I didn't find it funny. I just, like I said, it just felt, I don't know. Like I said, it was so obvious. And like, I don't understand why you want to make this movie. And I guess what bothers me more about this movie is the importance that some people are giving it, or praise that it is receiving. And like the reviews weren't overly good.
No, but it's like a 50%, I've seen, right, or something.
You know, people posting on Facebook and social media, and it's like, this is the best movie I've seen in the last 10 years. And
that's wild.
And to me, I'm like, how? It's like, oh, it's so important, like such a comment on our like current times and blah blah. It's like, it's the most obvious comment on our lives and society in general. It's like, there are so many things in it where it's, I'll give you an example. There's Ariana Grande is in this movie, and one of the like news like headlines in it that gets more attention than the comment that's going to kill everyone is, she just broke up with DJ whatever, Lil whoever, like rapper, DJ, I don't fucking know. It's Kid Cudi, I think, plays him. And it's like, oh my God. And then the thing is like, oh, well, the comic got no, like, you know, no buzz, no clicks. But the breakup, everyone's talking about the breakup. And oh my God, like people care more about that. And it just like, people like society and people in general are dumb and care about stupid things and are divided. And
oh, I think it's important to know for our audience who might not know who Ariana Grande is. She's a judge on The Voice. sorry. I didn't mean to derail
you.
No.
So it's just things like that, or it's like, it just seems like the whole message of the movie to me, or the varying like ideas that are brought up, are just like, it's not clever in any way. Like, I don't find it to be like smart or subtle. Like, there's no nuance to it, which I think like in comparison to like a Dr. Strangelove, and maybe it's just different times, and that movie is sort of revered now. Like, I'd much rather watch that. And I think it's a much better version of what this movie, what some people think it's doing. And I apologize to you if that's your feelings on it. I just,
oh no, don't, by the way, don't misrepresent my feelings. I give it a good review, but I'd not say it's like the best movie.
No. And this was people that I've seen on
that's a bananas.
I know, which like, you know, sure, maybe you thought it was funny or like had a good laugh at it, but like, I think people are overstating the importance. And like listening to interviews, it's like Leonardo DiCaprio is like, oh, it's important because it'll start a conversation about what? How people don't care. Everyone's having this conversation already about how
he's such a dummy.
People don't give a shit about real issues, and they care more about celebrities and gossip and bullshit, and that and politics are a joke. When you have Donald Trump running for president and making set comments about his sexy daughter, well, they basically do a play on that in this, but like vice versa. And I don't know. I guess it's just like some of the marketing around the movie as well that bothers me. Like, you see headlines popping up, and it's like, oh, they spent a whole day and Jonah Hill just improvised insults at you know, Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio. And I'm like, what a colossal waste of fucking time. Like, what a masturbatory thing to do. Is like, hey, Jonah Hill, you're so funny. Like, why don't we just have you like riff for a day? Like,
that cool. Seems gross.
Like, I don't know. It just like,
imagine being on set for that. Like, that's your life.
Yeah.
For that day.
I don't know. Like, I love This Is the End, but the more I like see of Jonah Hill, the more I think he is that character from the movie. Like, this over the top, like, faux nice, like, sort of like kind of douche. And like his appearances on like GQ YouTube videos talking about like his things he can't live without, and like being on Jimmy Fallon and talking about things, like, I look at this guy and I'm like, this dude, man, like, I can't handle it.
I don't know. I don't know anything about like the GQ thing or the Jimmy Fallon thing. Like, my exposure is this Wolf of Wall Street. He's been in something else that's been like,
and he's a good actor. Like, I think he's a very good actor. I think he's very good in Wolf of Wall Street. I think he does a good job at what he's doing in this movie. I just didn't find it funny. But like, he's very like, in This Is the End, he was funny. Super Bad, I enjoyed him in. You know, Moneyball, he's great. Like, just, you know, I think he's a very good actor. I just like, yeah, maybe I just wasn't separating the person, but like, all that stuff just adds to this. Like, I didn't, as much as it sounds like it, I didn't hate this movie, but like, it just seems like, oh, these articles pop up and I see people talk about it, and it's like, it's making me like the movie less just because all of the like other things that are impacting me. It's like, no,
just further entrenching you in your opinion.
Exactly. So please tell me what you enjoyed about this movie.
Well, I'm here to further entrench you in your position here. I'm a huge, well, not a huge fan of Adam McKay. I really liked The Big Short. Like, I watch it every year. I think it's a great movie.
I agree. I think The Big Short is fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't think this compares at all, though.
This is not nearly as good as The Big Short. So as I was watching this movie, very early on, they, you know, locate this comet, and they make the, Leonardo DiCaprio does his space math,
right.
Determines that the comet's going to collide with Earth. And I was like, how's this movie going to be 2.5 hours long? And then as I was watching, I was like, oh, this is like an interesting use of its time. You know, I found most of it funny. I don't think it should be subtle. And I think if you would watch, like, not to say like this is in the same league as Dr. Strangelove by any means, that movie isn't subtle either. I think that a lot of this is just meant to be, like, I think the time for subtlety with this concept has long been evacuated from the planet because it's fucking burning right now. So, like, the fact that it's on the nose and it's not subtle actually, I think, works in its favor, because it's kind of just like, and a lot of people are like, oh, this movie's just yelling at you for 2.5 hours. I don't think that's the case. I think that's kind of like a little bit unfair. Now, you could find this boring, you could find the performances to be bad, and all those things could collapse this experience for you. And that's completely fair and valid. And the humor, I already mentioned the humor, but like, if it's too on the nose and that's like, you know, bothersome, like, you know, I completely can see why that would be a turnoff. I did find it funny. I thought the fact that it aggressively went after what it was works for the movie. I don't want to talk about it without like being too spoilery, because it's also a very new movie.
Fuck it. If you don't want to hear spoilers for this movie, then you might as well just turn this off now, because this is the last movie that we're going to talk about. Don't continue listening, because we're about to spoil plot points in this movie. So
just continue anyways. throughout the course of the movie, I'm sure you were like me, like, is this actually going to happen?
The comet hitting the Earth, you mean?
Leonardo DiCaprio's character's name, who I don't fucking remember because I don't remember anything. I love the fact that he becomes like a mouthpiece BS. Like, he just like posits whatever is being fed to him at a certain point,
right.
Because he just loves the attention that he's, this newfound attention that he's getting, and he's like becoming more confident as a person, and he's misattributing that confidence to, you know, just his he gets a lot of like TV appearances, and he gets fed information by the White House, and he takes on that position. And I think that's like an interesting character arc for him, and he ends up cheating on his wife with who plays Kate Blanchett? Yeah, Kate Blanchett, who plays a news anchor whose show he frequents. It's meant to be like kind of like a Morning Joe-esque, right, you know, her and TV Tyler show, Perry. Like a surrogate. Yeah, yeah, her and Tyler Perry. Tyler Perry is a really good actor too, who people should give more roles.
I agree. Anytime I see him in something that isn't
Madea.
Well, and to be fair, I haven't seen Madea other than like clips, yeah, which is enough for me to know that I don't want to watch it.
It's not your thing.
But yeah, like I really liked him in Gone Girl. I did a great job in that. He's good in this. I think honestly, the hardest I laughed was probably when he made the joke about talks about the comet destroying the you know, your house. And what's his name? Leonardo DiCaprio's like, well, it destroyed everyone's house. He's like, but no, this one particular house in New Jersey. And he's talking about his ex-wife. I don't know why. That made me crack up because it felt like a real moment that like legitimately might happen. Whereas a lot of over the top isn't my thing. And I think a lot of the humor stems from sort of being over the top in this movie a little bit anyway. So
yeah.
I don't know. Like that's where it sort of fails for me, and I understand your point about, you know, you preferring it not being subtle, but I don't know. I guess for me, it's just personal preference, obviously, which movies,
yeah, of course,
you know, subjective, you know, art anyway. But
but you're right.
But yeah, no, I just. I guess when I look at things, it comes from a perspective of how would I want to tackle this? And a lot of the times, what do I think would be the best way to do this? And I am someone who likes subtlety and like prefers something that's like skewers something, but in a clever way where it's not like the most obvious way to do it. And that this just, or like not making the most obvious statement, or maybe reaching a little bit deeper than just like, you know, what is on the surface here, which is everything. Because there's not much below that. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, just personal preference. But yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy this movie. And the more I hear about it, the less I enjoyed the movie. And also, I just wanted to touch on one thing that doesn't come from a story perspective or a tone perspective necessarily. But it's editing and runtime. And I think that this movie does a poor job of both of those things. There's a lot of fat in this movie that I think is unnecessary, adds nothing to the movie, and it's too long. This movie is what, 2 hours and 20 some minutes, I think.
It's a bananas runtime. It's like a Marvel movie.
I'm watching Ariana Grande perform the concert, and I didn't find it funny. And like, why is this scene here? Like, they've got a whole musical number that, like, I guess some people found enjoyable, but I was not
having fun. I didn't enjoy that either.
You could have cut this, get rid of this 5 minutes out of the movie, plenty of other scenes. And like I said, the editing was just odd to me. Like, there's a lot of what's the term?
Stock footage. That's what they use in The Big Short too. I actually like Adam McKay's, the way that he does a lot of his movies nowadays with like, you know, he'll stop a movie and have like a quote or something, there is like a lot of stock footage in The Big Short. And I actually kind of enjoy it because it feels so, it's like unique. It's you can tell it's a movie by him immediately.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it just is a matter of like, you've done this already and you just keep doing it. But this just felt like disjointed, where it was like, and then it's like, oh, here's a bunch of clips of other things, and now back to the movie. Like, okay, cool. I had a lot of issues with this movie.
Yeah, I will support you 150% on the runtime and editing. The like you mentioned, the Ariana Grande performance, I like don't care at all. Like, there isn't an ounce of me that cares about that scene and its inclusion in the film. But for me, I think when I knew, like, I enjoyed this movie, is that when Leonardo DiCaprio, it's the final moments of the Earth, and he goes to, you know, reconcile with his wife, and he sits down with Jennifer Lawrence, her partner at the time, Timothy Chalamet, whose character I fucking like, actually. I thought that was funny. He was like a skate fuckboy. I enjoyed that. I don't know. The point is, like, as all of these characters were sitting around a table, waiting for the world to end, and, you know, to make good on the spoilery stuff, the world does end. I actually cared about all of the characters, and I really thought it was like a warm moment before the, like, world rushes in and destroys everything.
I'll give you that. I like that scene. I think it works. How it ends works.
It definitely sticks the landing, I think.
Yeah, except for the post-credits scene, which is so fucking stupid.
Wait, there's a post-credits scene?
Yeah. Or like mid-credits
scene. What is it?
It's them. It's the people who escaped and the thing landing.
I remember that.
They're all naked, and then the alien bird thing starts attacking them. I was rolling my eyes pretty hard. But I think the thing with Timothy Chalamet's character, there becomes a point where you're too famous or too well known to play certain things, in my opinion, where you're distracting by being this like smaller-ish character, over the top character in this movie, where I'm just like, it'd be like if you put Nicolas Cage there. It's like, this is Nicolas Cage hamming it up, which, like, obviously, like, he's known for hamming it up. But it feels like an actor who's like, oh, like, this director is making, you know, big movies that are people are winning awards for, and like, is well known, like, you know, the height of what you can be in the movie industry. So I want to get in on that. Let me jump in. Oh yeah, I can play this like wacky guy. And it's like, yeah, cool. Like, I don't know. It just, it didn't work for me. And like I said, maybe if it was somebody who wasn't, like, I was like, oh, here's Timothy Chalamet, like, having fun playing the wacky skater fuckboy. maybe it would have been different. And so, like, I don't know. It's like every famous person you can fit in. And it just, like I said, it becomes distracting, where it's like, I don't need you here. Yeah. You don't need to be in this role. Like, and certainly Timothy Chalamet is a gifted enough actor to play a fuckboy skater in a movie. Like, that's not what I'm saying, is he's not capable of doing that. It's just a matter of, like, him popping up here, and for me, just like immediately labeling it as my perception, which is like, oh, you just want to be in this Adam McKay movie, and like, you thought this would be like a fun lark to play this character that's a
fucking you're Paul Atreides, or what that Dune character's name is.
So I don't know.
Is it Paul?
Maybe.
But I never read Dune, to be honest, and haven't watched the new one yet.
Also, I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I don't think Jennifer Lawrence is that good an actress. I think that she's fine, but I think she's been punching above her weight class in terms of the roles and like awards nominations and wins.
It's funny. I was trying to think of like the counterpoint to that, and I can't think of anything. So I think you're probably right, Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah, I was trying to think of like, what would a movie be that, and like, you know, I mentioned like Nicole Kidman playing Lucy is like mind-boggling. I can't think of like a performance for her that is that equivalent. Oh, she's fucking awesome in Winter's Bone, but you know, do you ever see Winter's Bone?
I did. It's been a while. I watched it probably a year.
It's a great out, like,
which I enjoy.
Appalachian noir.
Yeah, which is good, and it's I think a very like pared down like performance where there's, you know, it's not like a showy performance, which is the type of performance I prefer. Which is probably why I enjoy it. And I don't think she's a bad actress. I just think that, you know, sometimes I'm watching her and I'm like, I don't really believe you. Like, I can see that you're acting here. I can see the same performance that I've seen her do in other places where it feels like you're doing the same thing. And like, like you said, the seams are showing, like I'm seeing the acting. There's a great joke on Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't know if you watch it.
Like 9 seasons of it. I haven't kept up. I'm doing that.
The season where they do the Seinfeld reunion and Jason Alexander.
I don't think I've seen that one, actually.
Okay. So the whole season is like they're writing the Seinfeld reunion and they're, you know, table reads and rehearsals and stuff and like visiting the old sets. But Jason Alexander is releasing a book and it's called Acting Without Acting. And it's, you know, a very small pamphlet, almost. And they make jokes about it. And it's like, well, you could have called it Acting With Acting. And it's just like, and he talks about, oh, you see the act, you know, hiding the craft and hiding the actor, blah. It's a very like pretentious conversation. Yeah. But that, it reminds me of that. It's like, I can see the acting happening here with Jennifer Lawrence, which, like, you know, nothing against her. I've liked her in movies. I really like The Silver Linings Playbook. You know, she's done good stuff. I think, honestly, The Hunger Games is the worst of her performance wise. Anyways, and as far as her stuff goes, but Stefan just did the, you know, whatever that thing is.
Is that
the Hunger Games? I don't know. You raise your fingers, man, and make a noise, and that's a,
you kiss the fingers, you lift the fingers, you present for, the fingers. For Rue. Your dead sister.
But yeah, anyways, I don't know. I feel like I've rambled on enough about this. I'm glad that you found something that you enjoyed in it, although I would have enjoyed more if we both disliked it together.
This is the whole point of the podcast. Exactly. We want to have different opinions. And like, to be honest, like, I fully understand everything you've said, and in some cases I largely agree. Like, the editing of this is bananas. It just felt like there weren't enough people to, you know, say, like, do you really need this?
Yeah.
And I think it's the one time you want executives there to, like, you know, point out faults.
I think that's why people go to Netflix, because they've got a shitload of money. And it's like, if you're a big name, it's like, do whatever you want. Like Scorsese, oh, you want to make a fucking $200 million movie with these guys, just de-age them like 3 hours? Yeah, fucking go for it.
Did you watch that?
The Irishman? I did.
I did not. I got like 40 minutes in. I was like, this is a dog shit movie. And I turned it off. fuck you, Martin Scorsese.
I didn't think it was dog shit. It's overlong.
I should review that movie.
And I'll never watch it again.
Yeah.
But when I finished it, I was like, this was like a good movie that I never want to see again.
Yeah. Stop de-aging actors, for the love of God, people. That's an example of bad CGI, where there's like the uncanny valley is quite wide, and it's very easy for people to fall into.
Yeah, and like,
please stop.
It's
age up. It's getting on people
better, but it's still not at a point where it needs to be done as frequently as people are doing it. And like, immediately it takes you out of the movie when you're looking at someone's face.
Plasticky Joe Pesci. Like, it's like a fucking mannequin Joe Pesci. It's haunting. Yeah,
it's weird.
Get rid of that.
Yeah, we don't need it.
I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to say about Don't Look Up, but I can't remember. I should have put, I have no notes.
After you posted titles on Facebook that it was your favorite movie of the last 10 years, you know, what more is there to be said?
Said it was better than Doctor Strangelove. Or How I Stopped, or what's the ellipses?
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and love
the Bomb. Yeah. In this case, The Comet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything else. So I don't think we're gonna do a movie next. I think we'll do our best of 2021 and have an extended break. Because I'm gonna be busy coming up. So it'll give me some time to I think I have everything locked in.
For your like
one title.
I don't know that we've established like specific awards that we're gonna be doing.
Do you wanna do the honors?
I mean, like, you and I.
So we're gonna do like so I think we can publicly agree to the following categories, and please stop me if I'm wrong. These are all your suggestions, which I think are like, is a great idea. Best film, which is an easy thing to do. We can find one film that we immensely enjoyed from the last year. Hidden Gem, which I think is a great, it allows us to maybe something that wouldn't initially be on our top five, but would be something that people might not have seen otherwise. I think it's a great category. I'm super on board. Most surprising film, which I already have mine, and it has a character that is like, sticks out like a sore thumb. That's I didn't want to say a sore thumb. I'm trying to think of something else. It's very distracting that they're in the movie, but I think it elevates it, actually. So I'm super on board with that category. We can agree to those publicly. Yeah, yes. To keep the Purgatories-esque structure, we're going to do best and worst movies, so we'll have a worst category, so or something that's disappointing, right. Best performances and least liked performances.
Okay,
not to be like too negative, but I think like there's movies that I 100% have give no shits shitting on whatsoever.
Yeah, no, you know, we talk about the good and we'll talk about the bad. That's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a completely fine, a reasonable thing.
Okay. All right, so is that it? Those are locked in what I need to have prepared?
Yeah, because I'm trying to like think of like good titles for all of them.
Okay.
And I don't want to think about a bunch of different like funny, you know, our branded awards categories. Okay. I don't want to do that much work.
All right. Well, then don't do it.
Yeah, it's just we'll leave it to those categories. Best movie, hidden gem, surprising film, most disappointing film, and then
performance.
Best performance, worst performance.
All right,
there we go. Cool.
Sweet.
So we'll do that next. I don't know when that's gonna, we'll record that or when we'll drop it. We're gonna get Jovanna hopefully to join us.
Yes.
Barring the unforeseen. But I think I'm done. I think we're done.
All right, let's be done.
We're done, right?
Yeah,
let's be done. We're not even gonna say bye this time. Okay. We're just finished. Okay, I'm gonna hit the stop button. We're done.
Yeah.